This is side two of the lecture on economics and prophecy. It can be absolutely shown that if an individual will learn to love the land and the country in which you find yourself, that the loving of that land will actually result in economic benefits to you, and if others, your neighbors and others around you will do the same thing, and it spreads from area to area throughout the land in which you live, believe it or not, that can provide one of the greatest economic benefits that you can imagine. Even if the land is some of the best on earth, or not so good, and if the weather is absolutely excellent, or maybe not quite as good as it should be, yet if people on the land will love the land that they have and unite together in loving it in a type of patriotic beliefs and actions regarding the land and thanking God, I mean the God in heaven, for giving the land that you have, you will be surprised at the economic benefits that that will bring to people. Now, that is most essential for us to realize, and it has not been taken into consideration by many economists in this world today. But the Bible absolutely shows that that is essential for proper economic development and prosperity as far as he is concerned. When he brought the ancient Israelites into the land of Canaan, he brought them into a land of milk and honey. He also told them that there were certain laws and regulations and teachings that he wanted them to obey. He gave them a temple, finally. It was first of all at Shiloh and then later at Jerusalem. And he allowed that to be a centralized area around which all of the tribes of Israel could direct their attention and they could have unity amongst all of the tribes worshiping under one God, worshiping under one system of laws, and they would be in the land that God gave to them and that they were to love that land. Now, the loving of the land could be directed to the capital city, Jerusalem. But Jerusalem itself just wasn't the essential thing. It was what Jerusalem represented. It represented the capital of the entire land of Canaan. It was the land of Canaan that was given to Abraham by promise, and then given on down to Isaac, and then to Jacob, and then to the 12 tribes of Israel. And that land finally had a capital. It was Jerusalem. And God absolutely demanded of the Israelites that they begin to love that land. They begin to love Jerusalem, the capital, that they would love and adore the temple, which was a representation of God's palace in heaven, that he, God himself, was resident and in the land and dwelling in the land of Israel. And the concept of the land being very important was put in the hearts of all Israelites from the time of Moses on down. And when the time of David, and then Solomon, when the temple was built, that idea of a capital area in the land, which would serve as the unifying force, Jerusalem and the temple, was most essential to keep all of the tribes in harmony with one another, so they could psychologically be acting together in unison. And the land that they lived on, this beautiful and lovely land, could be cultivated properly, the minerals could be extracted from it in a proper way, that they would treat it gingerly, that is, they would treat it with respect and with honor and all of that, but they could use that land to its full potential. It doesn't mean that you'd have to leave the whole land as a wilderness area. No, it was intended to be cultivated. The trees were intended to be cut down in a proper way, of course, and reforestation to be brought back in, and all things like that. And even in our lands today, which we have, these beautiful lands in which we live, we've got to learn to take care of them properly. Now, I don't mean by that that you can't drill for oil in certain places if proper protection is brought into effect, that you can't cut down timber and things of that nature, that you can't get cold and all of that, but you've got to learn to love the land and to treat it properly, and the environment around the land, the atmosphere in which we live, which is really becoming now quite a global affair. Now, I'm not one of these environmentalists, which means that you can't breathe at all in development or if you're going to develop something. Well, no. We've just got to learn how to use the land and use it properly. Treat it with respect, like the ancient Israelites did. And by treating it with respect, it's amazing what it will do for the coherence of the whole nation, for the psychological unity which can develop if people begin to love the land. That loving of the land was absolutely instilled in the ancient Israelites. And when later on the Jews were taken captive, the ancient Israelites and the Jews, and then even after the time of Christ, when Jerusalem was destroyed, 170 A.D., and many of the Jews were scattered around the then-known world. And certainly after 135 A.D., when the last remnants of Jerusalem, as far as being a Jewish city and all of that, were destroyed, the Jews could not even come into the environment of Jerusalem for a almost a 200-year period. And you know, they were always looking to get back to Jerusalem, to get back to the land of Canaan. And it's no wonder here in this 20th century that the Jews finally wanted to be able to be a state of their own, a nation of their own once again. And where do they want to go back to? They want to go back to their homeland, the homeland in the Middle East, the land of Canaan that was given to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It has been inbred into them, I should say, to absolutely love that land. And you know something? You and I ought to learn to love the lands on which we are given by God. Love them the best way we can. Our neighbors ought to do the same thing. And it makes no difference what type of religion we might believe, or even what type of race we are here in the United States of America, or Canada, or Great Britain, or Switzerland, or Australia, or wherever you are that I'm talking to. No, that is not the important thing. The thing is that all of us together should have something in common, absolutely in common, and we should never give up on it. We should all in common learn to love the land that is providing us with the beautiful, bountiful economic blessings coming from that land. We should learn to do it. And if we love this land in a patriotic type of a way, just like the ancient Israelites loved Canaan and still love it, you know, I've seen Jews getting off of planes, coming into Tel Aviv airport, at the Ben-Gurion airport. They'd never been to Jerusalem before, or the land of Canaan, which they considered to be their land. Walk down the stairs off the airplane, get down on their hands and knees, and kiss the tarmac there at Ben-Gurion airport, because they now were in the land of promise. And they looked upon it with a great deal of esteem. Do you know, the Arabs down there, who have been in that land for generations, also look at it that way. The ancient Philistines look on their land, just like down there in the southwestern part of the land of Canaan, just like the Jews do. That's why I am convinced that there will be a Palestinian state in that area coming up one of these days. And we're already beginning to see the start of it at this present time. And you know, there are other people in the world that love their lands. The Armenians love their land, which is presently in parts of Turkey and the Soviet Union. The people of Arab lands love their lands. And you can go on and on and on. And there is nothing wrong with that. We in the United States, or we in Great Britain, or in wherever we are, we ought to learn to love our lands. And it makes no difference, as I said before, what denomination a person might belong to, if he's a Christian, or if he's this, or whatever. You know, or what race we are, if we're all citizens of this land, we ought to learn to love this land like the ancient Israelites came to love the land of Canaan. In the Bible, in Psalm 122, is a most interesting psalm here, because it shows how the love for the land and the capital of the land, which was Jerusalem, was completely inbred into the people from the time of David and Solomon on down. And even it went back before that. But in Psalm 122, here is David delighting in the house of God and Jerusalem and the 12 tribes and the lands that they possessed. He says, "I was glad when they said unto me, Let us go unto the house of the Lord. Our feet shall stand within your gates, O Jerusalem. Jerusalem is builded as a city that is compact together. Whether the tribes," now he means the whole tribes of Israel, "whether they go up, the tribes of the Lord, unto the testimony of Israel, to give thanks unto the name of the Lord. For there are set thrones of judgment, and thrones of the house of David." There were 12 thrones set in Jerusalem. Now, there was one of David. That's quite true. In fact, he had more than one, because he had children coming along who were going to sit on those thrones too. But you know, there was literally 12 thrones in Jerusalem, one for each of the tribes of Israel. and what it was doing by having a capital city at Jerusalem, a compact city, as David was saying, is to draw all of their attention to that capital city and to the temple that was there and to the God who was resident in that temple. And that caused all of those Israelitish tribes, no matter where they lived in the land, in the extremities of it or where, or even in the interior, they were all united together in a common bond of loving that land because they looked upon that land as the land of God. And here is David going on. He says in verse 6, "Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. They shall prosper that love you," he says to Jerusalem. "Peace be within your walls and prosperity within your palaces." You see, he's talking about economics here. If people will cohere together in unity on the good land that God gives, and if the precipitation comes down in rain and snow and dew in proper season, and all of that, and the people living on the land are in harmony with one another, and they love that land, the people then are going to prosper as never before. But if you have fightings and bickerings going on between people who are living on that land, even if the land is good, even if the precipitation is right on time, you're going to have economic problems in that land. You have got to have security. You've got to have people loving the land. And in the Bible, Moses said it makes no difference if it's an Israelite living in the land or a stranger living in the land. Means a foreigner, a Gentile, or whatever. If they're living in the land, they should be treated just like everyone else who lives in that land. And here in the United States, or in Great Britain, or in Canada, or Australia, or wherever, we have people of different races living here. Of course we do. We come from all different types of stock. And here in the United States, the American Indian was here before we got here. And they're all, and we are all, a part of the same society nowadays. You know, if we would get together, all of us in these nations I've been mentioning, or let's say in any nation of the world as far as that goes, and you cohere your minds together to love the land in unity, do you realize we can even have our own religious beliefs, which differ from one another a little bit if we want to. Certainly we can even have different politics to a certain extent, but you've got to learn in unison to love the land. If you do that, we, if any problems ever come up where this land is going to be threatened by some outside force of some kind trying to take over this beautiful land of ours, what we will do is to unite as a people against it. You see, that is the point. That is what can bring economic prosperity. You can have peace and prosperity when you have people living on the land who are unified in loving the land. Now, it would be beautiful, I must admit this, if everyone had the same religion. That is, the true religion. I grant you that. If everyone had the same ideals on every point that you could imagine. Yes, it seems like that might be better. I grant you that. But at the same time, the common denominator for us today in our Western lands that we enjoy so much, if we can learn to love those lands, we ought to have a patriotic feeling for them. And I mean that. Now, that doesn't mean we should say that other lands are bad or anything of that nature. No, but God has given us some of the nicest, most beautiful lands on earth in which to live, and we have responsibilities from God because we have those lands. It's true we should help people in other areas, but help ourselves at home too. My goodness, you know, there are lots of problems here in the United States and in Great Britain and in Australia that need to be straightened out before we start straightening out or helping people in other areas. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't help us. Other people. We are blessed with some of the best lands on earth, but I'll tell you what, our economic prosperity will stay high as long as the rains come, as long as we don't have plagues going throughout the land, which seemingly are on the horizon to some of us, as long as we can cohere together as a people on these beautiful lands, we can normally have economic stability at the highest level. Now, on this paper economy that we have today, which is amongst us, we'll have our ups and downs. That's quite true. My, you know, we have recessions every once in a while. We've even had a depression back in 1929. I do not foresee any major depression like it was in 1929 happening in the United States or in the world in the near future. Oh, yes, there's going to be a depression. It's going to be pretty bad, but not as bad as before. And the reason is because too many people were very independent back in nations independent of one another. But today, so much the world is interdependent upon each other that really there's going to have to be some checks and balances on these things, and everybody will want the good lands such as North America and Europe and other areas like Australia, New Zealand, and places of that nature which have good lands and where food can be raised and things like that. We're going to have a sharing of all of that. And you know there's going to have to be a giving and taking on these matters. And if people can absolutely begin to see that God is the one that we ought to be worshiping, the God of the Bible, and appreciating the good lands on which He has given us, and we ought to protect those lands and thank God for them, if we do that and cohere together in our minds, believe it or not, we can come out of economic depressions even much, much quicker. It can be done. And even recessions. We have to learn to cooperate one with another. Here is David saying, pray for the peace of Jerusalem, that they may prosper that love you, Jerusalem, which of course was the capital of God's kingdom. And by being the capital, that was a symbol of the whole of the nation, of all 12 tribes that were dwelling upon the whole or within the whole land of Israel. Peace be within your walls and prosperity within your palaces. For my brethren, companions' sake, I will now say, peace be within you. Because of the house of the Lord our God, I will seek your good. Now that is Psalm 122. That is one psalm out of many sections of the Old Testament, which tell us that inbred into the Israelites was a love for the land and the capital of the land, which was Jerusalem, and the house of the Lord in which He dwelt, which was in Jerusalem. And if we can apply that same principles to the lands in which we live and cohere together when problems come up, you know, we are going to survive. And I mean survive very well indeed. Our racial problems, our social problems, our religious problems, our differences that we have in even our own lands can be solved so easily if we just all learn to love the land and love our neighbors next to us, whatever we do. You know, if sometimes wars have proved to be good, external wars, the Second World War certainly caused not all Americans, but most, to come together in unity. The people in Great Britain came together. They had diverse opinions maybe before, but they certainly came together as never before to be able to put down Hitler and the Nazis. And the same thing in Australia, the same thing in various other places. You know, we need today to have a love for the land. We need to be patriotic to our lands. Now, I don't mean by that we have to agree with everything that the government says. I mean, after all, the government has one person in charge and another person in charge. And sometimes they do right and sometimes they do wrong. We have the power of the vote here in our Western societies, and it's not a perfect government. We all know that. My Winston Churchill said democracy was one of the worst form of governments, but it's the best one that he knew of until something better would come along, and he meant the kingdom of God. I agree with it 100%. Oh no, we can criticize our government. We have the right to do that if we want to. Thank God we do. I'm not going along with everything that's any particular individual or groups of people or what they say or what they do. No, that's not the point. But this land on which we are all a part of, that God has graced us with, we ought to learn to love it and to protect it. And you know, we have the most beautiful lands on earth. And if we can economically control them, well, what we can do also is to help in controlling in a proper way through Western democracy, the way we look at it, the rest of the world. Now, for the next 20 years, for the next 10 to 20 years, this lecture I'm giving here is supposed to be on prophecy too. And if I can get through it with this cold that I have, I just got over the flu and I can hardly talk right now, and you probably are ascertaining that. Well, that's right. I'm wanting to cough most of the time, and every once in a while you'll find me pausing and I stop so I can cough and then get back to this lecture here. So I hope you will understand that, and I apologize for it. But still, this lecture here is important for us to understand. And I wanted to go ahead and give it anyway, because what we need to realize is that in the next 10 to 20 years in advance of us, we are still here in the West, in North America, still in control of most of our economic factors. Now, it seems like that our debt is getting way out of hand, and that is absolutely ridiculous. I know that. And that our overseas debt that we have is great. That's true. All of these things are absolutely true. But still, we are the ones that control this area of the world. It's still in our hands. The others that we owe money to, a tremendous amount of money, like Japan, for example, have nothing against the Japanese at all. My goodness, they give us very fine and beautiful products. Some of their cars are the best in the world in their electronic products. That's fine. All right, we're in a war with them 40 years ago. And I realize there are lots of hostility still in some people's minds over that. Well, that's just the way it is. Up and down of life, that's what happens. But you know, it's not that I have anything against them at all. But you know something? They do not control the finest lands on earth. They simply do not. It is ourselves who do. And it makes no difference if we owe them $100 billion or 10 times that much. Do you know something? In no way are they going to be able to upset the North America in its economic position in the next 10 to 20 years, and I can guarantee you of that, with all that paper money that they have in their banks over there at the present time. Because I'll tell you what, it's just like, you know, simple economics, it comes down to this. Suppose we had a desert region which was very unproductive, but in the middle of that desert region was 10 square miles of an oasis. That's like Jericho over there in the Judean wilderness. You know, that area there, if you have an army that can protect it and all of that so that only the people you want to get in or out can do that, and that you live in that beautiful oasis, the people around you there, there may be many of them, and they may have lots of money to buy things from you. But you know something? If they have the money to buy, they need the money. If they need the food to eat, is what I meant, that's in the, from that oasis. And they can have all the money in the world that we have given them for products that they have given to us. But let me tell you, when it comes down to the basics, to the food and to the things that they need to live, they're going to have to come to us, and their money will be a lot cheaper in the future than it is now. Now, I'm just mentioning that as a very basic, simple, almost infantile way of looking at it. I realize it. But let me tell you this. The United States of America and Western Europe are not going down anytime soon. We've got another 10 or 20 years of general prosperity. Now, we're going to have recessions. We may even, in the next few years, have what is called a depression. I do not believe that it will go as low in economically as back in 1929 and 1930s. I don't think it's going to go that way. The reason is because prophecy says too much has to happen. Good things have to happen. There's going to be a restoration of all things on this earth. God is beginning to work now to get out His truth to this world. It's going to take economic efforts to do it. We're going to have our Western nations in a proper position economically to get out the gospel. Now, I realize that in economic times of economic crises and things like that, people have a tendency to turn back to God, to religion. And He may allow that to happen from time to time. But He's not going to allow in the next 10 to 20 years, and I think almost 30 years, for any major disasters to take place in this earth economically. Oh yes, we will have our recessions, perhaps a depression or two, but not on the scale as before, so that we can get out the gospel to this world. The Bible says there's coming a time of great prosperity and time of peace. In fact, right at the very end, the last 7 years is going to be chaotic. That's true, just before the second coming of Christ. But the years prior to that, the 33 years prior, are not going to be all that bad here in the Western world. In fact, we're finding that there are movements toward peace all the time in the world today, and it's going to get more and more that way. I said over 15 years ago that the Soviet Union is going to be a different place by the turn of the century than it was earlier on. It's going to be far more westernized. And we're seeing, with Gorbachev and the others, that very thing happening. It's going to open up in Eastern Europe. It's going to happen in Southeast Asia. It's going to happen even in China. There's going to be a movement toward peace. And the wars that we had 40 years ago in Europe, nation between nation, are practically of the past. That is true. There are going to be some economic wars coming up, but even those will be resolved as time goes on. We are coming into a time where general prosperity, I believe, is going to be here. And we, who are a part of God's people, should take advantage of it. Advantage in getting out the gospel, printing it, teaching it, lecturing on it, whatever, to show that the biblical revelation is the truth of God. We're given some opportunities, I believe, to do it, and I think God is going to give us the means by which we can do and accomplish. I mean, people in the Western world, when they finally get a hold of themselves and to realize that that Bible is the truth of God, that it is the truth to you and me today, and when we can see that He has something good to give to this world before the second coming of Christ, then we can get behind the effort ourselves and do the job that He wants us to do. To be able to do that, we're going to have the economic means to do it. Now, there are going to be some ups and downs, I know, but the Bible says there's general peace and prosperity are beginning to come into this world. And the wars that we have been subjected to over the last first part of this century, over the last 20 years in some cases, are going to diminish more and more as far as the Western world is concerned. You're going to see the Soviet Union opening up even more, and they are going to be economically blessed for it by the turn of this century coming up. And China is also going to be economically blessed even more, and it's going to come into India and other places like that. We're going to have to go through some recessions and maybe a major depression, not as large as before, to be able to work out some economic problems that have developed because of this paper currency and things of that nature that we have in existence at the present time. But we who live on these beautiful lands that God has given us, if He will allow us to have proper precipitation, and if we can have unity in spirit, unity in purpose, if we can get rid of our problems internally and begin to love one another a lot better, and the way we can do that is to have a common love for the land, you see, for this beautiful land that God has given to us. If we can link our arms together in that, based upon the principles of civilization, which we all know, and I mean, I'm talking about every one of us, no matter what race you are, no matter what religion you are, no matter what anything you are, as long as you have a love for these beautiful lands and the environment and the society around which we are. Now, if you don't like it exactly, we have the right to change it, but do it within law. Do it in a way which is proper, the way that the Bible says to do it. If we can link arms together, and I think there's going to be a tendency toward that coming up in the next few years, we're going to be in an economic situation which is going to be much better for all of us. I see that happening as far as the Bible is concerned. I see a more of a coherence coming amongst peoples in the various lands. And in fact, as Europe begins to come together over there, there are some people who say that that is going to be the beast power, the 10 nations that are going to come and conquer the United States of America and all of that, and it's going to take over world government. Oh no, that is not going to happen in Europe. It's going to come out of the Middle East. The trouble spot for the next 10, 20 to 30 years, I guarantee you where it's going to be, which will affect almost everything on earth, and even the economic situation that we have. It's going to be situations in the Middle East. It's going to come out of Jerusalem. It's going to come out of Israel. It's going to come out of the lands next to Israel, because quite a number of political things have to happen in that area, which are going to be difficult. They're going to be very difficult to solve. One of the first things that has to happen is a Palestinian state. Once that is solved, a relative peace will come in that area over there. And we will find that other nations such as Syria and Iraq and Iran and Egypt and other areas like that will begin to cooperate with one another and begin to cooperate with Israel as time goes on. But there's going to be some difficulty in the next 10, 20 to 30 years in that area of the world. As far as the United States and Canada is concerned, we're going to get together closer and closer. We're going to find also that other nations are going to be doing the same thing, and even the Arabs are going to do it. Throughout North Africa, there are going to be a tendency, as prophecy shows, for peoples to link up one with another in economic union so that everyone can begin to benefit from the economic blessings that are going to begin to come on the earth. Now, by that, I don't mean that they're just going to be poured out without some effort. No, there's going to be a lot of effort that's going to have to take place. But there's going to be generally economic prosperity between now and the next 20 years. And in the last 7 years, however, however, of the time called the end of the age, there's going to be a great chaos on this earth, as indicated in the book of Revelation. But we have a few years to go on that. What we need to do is to look at the situation we have today and to realize that God is beginning to bless us with our ups and downs. That's quite true. But in Western world, in the United States and Canada, in Australia, and in Great Britain, and in even in Europe and places like that, you're going to find that peace, more peaceful circumstances are going to come. It's going to be economic problems, that's quite true, between nations, but that will be resolved by the time of the 20th century comes to an end. Basically, the problems are going to be focused almost entirely on the Middle East as far as world-shaking political events taking place. We need to watch that area of the world. But as far as we are concerned, we should take advantage of the time just ahead of us to get out the gospel, to get out the teaching of the Bible, to get out a manuscript version of the Bible, to bring back to the knowledge of the people the God who gives us these economic blessings in the first place, and who is the one who is giving us all of the blessings, not only now, but a future life with Him in the kingdom of God in the resurrection. We need to be thankful for the knowledge that God gives us, to get behind the effort of getting out this gospel to the world. If we do, we're going to be blessed here and now, and God will protect us as time goes on. That is His promise. This concludes side 2 of the lecture, Economics and Prophecy.